Something my wife will tell you, and she's here to defend herself this morning, is that one of my less lovable idiosyncrasies is a penchant for collecting things. As a kid, I collected hats, and then 1 to 25 scale model cars and trucks. In university, I collected hymn books. Believe it or not, I used that as a pickup line in university. I said to a girl, "Do you want to come back and see my hymn book collection?" And it worked. In grad school, I collected theological books, and then the model train bug hit me, and well, the rest is history. Well, you may have noticed that there was sort of an ascending value of those collectibles, because through that period of time, of course, my income was increasing too. And most of us collect something, whether it's commemorative plates or spoons or autographs of famous people or cars. Is it wrong to collect things? No. Everybody should have a hobby of some sort, and for some people that involves collecting things. The trick is, as with so many things, collecting in moderation. Recognizing that what we collect is not necessarily an important part of everyday living. Now, we're talking these days about minding your own business. And last week we talked about how important it is for each of us to understand that God has given us a... what? A business. God has given each one of us a business. We have been called to be stewards, to be managers of this business that God has given us. And most of us, whether it's an obsession of collecting stuff or for other reasons, haven't always been good stewards of all to which God has entrusted us. The good news is that we can turn that around by developing some good habits, some good disciplines when we come to handle our money. As I said last week, God thinks that money is a pretty important thing that He's given us to, He's entrusted with us, because if you think about it, money is something that Jesus talks about 5 times more than faith, 5 times more than prayer in the Bible. Last week we looked at the parable of the talents and how when we take seriously that God has given each of us a business to run, we can wisely invest what He has given us and be able to make a difference with that investment. And today I want us to look at another part of the Gospel of Matthew, right in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is addressing treasures in heaven. Why does He talk about money so much? Well, for Jewish people, wealth was often seen as a sign of the blessing of God and a reward for obedience to God. It's very much a merit-based, works-based kind of understanding of God rather than a sense of relationship as we understand it. At the same time, though, wealth could be garnered illegitimately, and this was not to be seen of God. The prophets often lament, "Why do the wicked prosper while the righteous just languish in poverty?" The accumulation of wealth, one scholar has said, for its own sake is deceptive because one can find in material treasure a false sense of security or an inaccurate assessment of one's spirituality. So as Jesus warns His listeners about treasure, let's have a look at Matthew chapter 6, beginning at verse 19 and going to verse 24. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal." Now, why did He choose moth and rust? In those days, of course, a moth was something that could destroy basic human things, your garments especially. A moth could go in and just make an awful mess of it. And rust is a word, we think of rust as something that happens to the fenders of your car, but in the sense in which the Bible is using it here, it has as much to do with consuming anything. So, not just metals, but any valuable possession can be consumed. So don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths can go in and get it and where rust will destroy it and where thieves can take it away. Verse 20, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. He didn't actually say what those are, but he might be referring back to earlier in the chapter where he was talking about the righteous acts that are discussed there. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. for where your treasure is, there your heart, the core of your being, will be also. It's about a contrast of values. Then he says in verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. Isn't that true? When you look at somebody, often by their eyes, you can tell what's going on inside. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Now he's seeing eye as a metaphorical term, as a lamp that illumines a person's inner life. Verse 24, no one can serve two masters. And the word serve there is the sense of being a slave. Nobody can be a slave to two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. These are not just emotions, but they're about patterns of life. And then he says, you cannot serve both God and money. You notice there, if you're either in the Bible or if you're looking up here, money is capitalized there. The reason it's capitalized is because money is seen in the context in which Jesus is talking about it as a rival God. As a rival God. And it comes from, you know, the old language used the word mammon, and it comes from an old Hebrew word that refers to wealth or property. You can't serve both God and stuff, essentially. We need discipline around how we handle money because nobody can serve two masters. It's God or money, not God and money. Can't have both. Few of us, though, would see ourselves as servants of the almighty dollar, would we? But it just sometimes kind of happens very slowly and progressively and unintentionally. You've heard how to boil a frog, right? I don't know why anybody would do this, but it is possible to boil a frog. The trick is, don't put it in boiling water, it'll jump out. What you do is you put it in tepid water where it will be very comfortable. It'd be kind of like its own little hot tub kind of deal going on. And then you just crank up the heat. And eventually, the water gets warmer and warmer and warmer, and the frog just kind of says, and acclimatizes to it. But by the time it gets to the boiling point, you have yourself a boiled frog. Now, why you'd want to do that, I don't know. But that's the analogy that so commonly gets used. And the way it works is this. You know, we get some money in our pockets and we say, I'm going to be a saver. I'm going to be a saver. And then we find out just how much we like to spend money. And then we get a pre-approved application for a credit card. And then we find ourselves spending more than we're taking in, and we're in debt, and it's the debt that enslaves us to money. We don't want to be in debt, so we start using other credit cards to pay off the debt. Just like in the video. And it just keeps getting worse, because in most cases what happens is our spending habits don't change along with our desire to get out of debt. And so the debt load worsens. What we need to do when this happens is to start to act our wage. Not only to live within our means, but to actually live beneath our means. When I'm working in the train room laying track, where it is always September 1978, I put on an internet radio station that plays 70s music, you know, just to get me in the mood. And there's a commercial that often gets played on one of these stations with alarming regularity that's talking about people who are trying to get themselves out of debt, and this is an organization that claims it will help you get out of debt. And their tagline is this: are you sinking in debt? Well, it's not your fault. Diana can probably hear me when I do this, because every time that commercial comes on and I hear that statement, I shout back to the radio as if it could hear me, yes, it is! Last time I checked, it was my fault that I was in debt. You can't blame the banks for our own spending habits. You can't blame them for sending us even pre-approved credit applications, because we actually have to sit there and fill them out and even sign them. Banks don't care about your spending habits or your indebtedness, because they would really want you just to pay the minimum monthly payment. They're very happy when you do that because that's how they make those multi-million billion dollar profits every year, is by us paying the minimum balance. I looked up some stats on Canadian credit card debt. Most recent year I could find them for was 2007. 25% of Canadians, excluding their mortgage, owe between $10,000 and $40,000. That's outside the mortgage. Exactly. Owe between $100,000 and $200,000 prior to their mortgage payment. Isn't that something? Between $100,000 and $200,000. 28% of Canadians don't have a clue what the interest rate is that's charged on their main credit card. Like I said last week, when it comes to money, God is concerned about more than just what we give to the church. God has given each of us a business, and we're called to manage that business well. There was a book written called The Millionaire Next Door, and researchers wanted to discover how wealthy people view their money. So they went and visited expensive neighborhoods, and they found people with lots of stuff, but not very much money. Just a lot of debt. These folks, in many cases, were actually pretending to have a lot of money. And then they visited middle-class neighborhoods, and they found the millionaire next door. Average people living beneath their means, investing well. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 7 says this: one person pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. Proverbs 12, 9: better to be a nobody and yet have a servant than pretend to be somebody and have no food. It reflects the proverb we looked at last week: the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender. Like the people researched in that book, many of us, and that includes me, have sometimes bought things that we didn't need with money that we didn't have to impress people we don't even know. And that's bondage. That's slavery. We tend to see debt as normal. But get this. In 1985, the average Canadian saved 15.8% of his or her take-home pay. By 2003, that figure was 1.4%. In the United States, in 1929, 2% of homes had mortgages against them. 40 years later, 2% of homes did not have mortgages against them. There was a real flip happened in those years of scarcity and then prosperity. So what do we do? Well, first thing is you want to train your money. Make your money behave. Well, how are you going to do that? If you're a note taker, key thought number one in your bulletin this morning is this: by building a budget, I can train my money. I can train my money. There are many ways to build budgets, but the simplest way is just to figure out how much money comes in, how much goes out in fixed costs and debt reduction, and to live within the remainder. Creating a budget is easy. Living within the remainder, not so much. It takes self-control, which is one of the fruit of the Spirit. Most of us, when we think self-control, when we're going through that list of the fruit of the Spirit, we're not usually thinking about our money. But in fact, we need to be thinking about it as well, as part of our discipline of self-control. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28 says this: like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. A lack of self-control, including financial, is an opening for the enemy to attack. When we train our money, we find it easier to say no to things for a time, knowing that if we say no now, once we're out of debt, we will be able to say yes for the rest of our lives in a disciplined manner. So ask yourself this question: what kind of things can I say no to now in order to put myself in a better financial position in the future? That new vehicle? The second or third home? The 73rd pair of shoes? Not easy, but we can do it. And if we can do it, it's a life-changing thing. It frees us up. Instead of having us trying to serve both God and money, when money becomes our servant instead of our master, we can do amazing things for God. Second key thought: pray before you pay. infomercial producers know that there are endorphins that come shooting through our bodies when we see something interesting on TV. And so they say to us, if you call in the next 20 minutes, you will get this bonus. Knowing that inside those 20 minutes, those endorphins will start to die down, and you might change your mind and believe that you can possibly live a fulfilled Christian life without a Snuggie. That's why we can choose to pray before we pay. You walk into the big box store and see some fancy new piece of electronics on sale. Walk. No, don't walk. Run away. And pray about it. Talk to God about it. If it's not too expensive, pray for a few days about it. If it's, say, between $100 and $1,000, take a week and pray about it. If it's over $1,000, pray about it for a month. If God wants you to have it, it'll still be there when the time comes. I almost said pray for it, didn't I? Don't give in to every impulse. What did it say in Proverbs? Like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Train your money, pray before you pay. And if you're thinking, oh, Jeff, this is hard, understand, I'm preaching this sermon to myself as much as I'm preaching it to you. Let's think now about developing our business plan for this business God has given us. 26% of Canadians say that their top concern with credit and debt management is their inability to deal with unexpected emergencies. So the first step, and this is key thought number three, is to build the Oh No Fund. I call it the Oh No Fund rather than the Emergency Fund because we can be really creative, at least speaking for myself, really creative about what constitutes an emergency. I need this, and it's an emergency. I need that new set of fake nails, that new golf club, that new locomotive for the layout. The Oh No Fund should have $1,000 in it that's set aside for things like broken water pipes and fallen down eaves troughs and unexpected car repairs and other rather unglamorous things that need to be fixed. If you're thinking that it would be pretty hard for you to come up with that $1,000 without going into more debt, be creative about it. Sell something, your hockey cards, jewelry you don't wear, sell anything but your kids. Just get that fund together. Another thing you can do is clip coupons. You're thinking, oh, I don't have time to clip coupons. I want you to, if you get a chance, go and visit smartcanucks.ca. It is a website, I saw it advertised on television, and it's a website that gives you coupons or gives you a number of links to find coupons, such that if you'll take the time to do it, you might be able to get your grocery shopping done on a whole lot smaller budget. So get the Oh No Fund set up with $1,000. Second step, key thought number four, is to eliminate overhead. This is about reducing debt. And the easiest way to reduce debt is to pay it off. And you're thinking, Jeff, you are the master of the obvious, aren't you? Well, but how are you going to pay it off? You got to find more money every month. How are you going to find more money every month? Well, be creative. Take on another job if you have to. Eliminate some things that we think we can't live without. Cable television, maybe. The expensive data plan on the cell phone. The $5 drinks in the coffee shop. I don't have time to go through it today, but if you get a chance, and if you're in Life Connect, you'll get the link for this through your leader. Go and do an internet search for Dave Ramsey's Debt Snowball, and you'll see some great ways to start paying down debt and reducing overhead. Dave Ramsey is a Christian financial guy, and he's not one of those wacko financial guys. He's actually got his head on pretty straight. And his debt snowball approach helps you get rid of your smallest debt first, and then once you do that, you apply that to the next one, and once you're through that, you apply that to the next one, and so on and so on, until pretty soon you're out of debt. You can save all kinds of money. And here are some examples of, you know, being able to help pay down your debt. Here's, you know, $600 a month that you could save. Avoid clothes that need dry cleaning. You save money that way. cut out the cable or the satellite, dispense with Friday night takeout, nix the Starbucks breaks, save $120 a month apparently by clipping coupons, brown bag your lunch, give up one club membership and jog or bike or swim on your own, and borrow from the library instead of buying books and videos. Not that hard. It's a significant adjustment, but it's not that hard. We just have to think about it to be disciplined about it. But if you get those debts paid off and keep paying yourself with that money after the debts are paid off, you know what you'll be able to do then? Pay off your house. And then you will be debt-free and free to invest in eternal things that we're going to talk about next week. So build the O&O fund, eliminate overhead, and finally, build the reserve fund. The reserve fund is simply this: 3 months of living expenses. Whatever it takes to live, multiply that by three and sock it away. And then if there's an unforeseen loss of work or some significant sickness, you've got a bit of a buffer there. Well, why do we want to do all this? Because we want to take what Jesus said seriously. No one can serve two masters, he said. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. If you're a follower of Christ here this morning, you're not driven by the world. You and I, we've got a higher calling. Don't get me wrong. Having a lot of money is not bad. It can be very good. To be flat broke is no more spiritual than to be wealthy. Money is neutral. Money is a tool. The love of money, on the other hand, is very dangerous. But God's people are called to love God and not money. We don't serve money, we use it. It is our slave, it is our servant, not our master. And no matter what our financial position might be, we need to take a look at it with respect to our allegiances. Think about the people in Haiti right now. The people in Haiti have been left without a home, without a job, without a loved one, without a single possession because of the earthquake. And it shows us just how blessed we are. How important it is for us to get our own finances under control so that we can be prepared to do things like reach out and offer help to the people of Haiti. Now, to be honest, there'll be some people maybe here today who are feeling as destitute as some of those Haitians. You don't have control of your finances. You don't know where it's all going. You made bad decisions. You want to get out of the hole that you're in. There is hope. You can get out of that hole. If you truly want to honor God with your finances, He will give you the strength and the resolve to mind your own business.